All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesa Sanivani Paskatyade Satarani. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Guru and Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Samsajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakalpa Chubhischa Kipasam Vyabhajab Dijanam Pavanevya Vaishnavi Vinamoyam. Does this? I don't think it's doing anything. No, he already did that. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
My voice is quite loud.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it there? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So it's June 14th, 2015, in Perth, Australia. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 7, further increased by Vidura, Text 30. Yagnasya cha vitanani.
Yagnasya cha vitanani.
Yogasya cha pata prabho.
Yogasya cha pata prabho.
Nice karmyasya cha sankhyasya.
Nice karmyasya cha sankhyasya.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Please chant.
Yajnasya cha vitanani.
Yajnasya cha vitanani.
Yogasya cha pata prabho.
Yogasya cha pata prabho.
Nishkarmasya cha sankhyasya.
Nishkarmasya cha sankhyasya.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Yajnasya cha vitanani.
Yajnasya cha vitanani.
Yogasya cha pata prabho.
Yogasya cha pata prabho.
Nishkarmasya cha sankhyasya.
Nishkarmasya cha sankhyasya.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Yajnasya cha vitanani.
Yajnasya cha vitanani.
Yogasya cha pata prabhu.
Yogasya cha pata prabhu.
Nishkarmasya cha sankhyasya.
Nishkarmasya sankhyasya.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Yajnasya cha vitanani.
Yajnasya cha vitanani.
Yogasya cha pata prabho.
Yogasya cha pata prabho.
Naiskamyasya cha sankhyasya.
Naiskamyasya cha sankhyasya.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Ladies.
Yajnasya cha vitanani.
Yogasya cha pata prabho.
Naiskarmasya sankhyasya.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Yajnasya vitanani.
Yajnasya cha vitanani.
Yogasya cha pata prabho.
Yogasya cha pata prabho.
Naiskarmasya cha sankhyasya.
Naiskarmasya cha sankhyasya.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Tantram va bhagavat smritam.
Yajnasya,
of
sacrifices,
cha,
also, vitanani, expansions, yogasya, of the mystic powers, cha, also, pataha, ways, prabho, O my Lord, naishkarmyasya, of knowledge, cha,
and
sankhasya, of analytical studies,
Tantram,
the path of devotional service. va, as well as
Bhagavat,
in relation with the personality of Godhead. Smritam, regulative principles. Just looking at this word, Naishkarmya. So I have I had a god sister named Naishkarmi, and her legal name before she got initiated was Karmi. And when Prabhupada initiated her, and he heard that her name was Karmi, he just laughed and laughed and laughed. He said, so now you are Naishkarmi. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Please also describe the expansions of different sacrifices and the paths of mystic powers, analytical study of knowledge, and devotional service, all with their respective regulations. Purport. The word tantram is significant herein. Sometimes tantram is misunderstood to be the black spiritual science of materialistic persons engaged in sense gratification, but here tantram means the science of devotional service compiled by Srila Narada Muni. One can take advantage of such regulative explanations of the path of devotional service and make progressive advancement in the devotional service of the Lord. Sankhya philosophy is the basic principle of acquiring knowledge, as will be explained by the sage Maitreya. The Sankhya philosophy enunciated by Kapila Dev, the son of Devahuti, is the real source of knowledge about the Supreme Truth. Knowledge not based on the Sankhya philosophy is mental speculation and can yield no tangible profit. Yajnasya cha bitana ni yogasya cha pata prabho naishkarmyasya shashankasya tantram va bhagavat smitam. Please also describe the expansions of different sacrifices and the paths of mystic powers, analytical study of knowledge, and devotional service, all with their respective regulations. So we may wonder here why Vidura doesn't just ask about bhakti. Why does he ask about yoga and sankhya and yajna and naishkarmya, all these things which are different paths. Pataha means paths, all of these different paths. In this section, he's asking so many questions. And I think the issue has been a big one for us in the Hare Krishna movement. What is valid knowledge? What is a valid source of knowledge? You know, in the early days of our movement, in our Gurukulas, we didn't teach much other than, you know, Sanskrit and Bhagavad Gita and Krishna's pastimes. And the children grew up, Prabhupada said they shouldn't be known as fools, but they grew up to be fools. They grew up without any kind of solid academic education, and they weren't capable of doing anything in the world. I remember I even had a father of one of my students say to me, you should not teach them anything useful in the world, and that way they won't have any choice but just to live in a temple and, you know, clean the floor, because they won't know how to do anything else. So I thought that was rather radical. But in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada says that the Gurukula is meant for not only training in values, but for specific training for a livelihood. And Srila Prabhupada, in talking about the Brahmachari Ashram in Gurukula in 1976 in Mumbai, said that the Brahmachari should know something of everything and everything of something. And he put that in the category of the 26 qualities of devotee as being expert. So here Vidura wants to know something of everything. He wants to know something of everything and also everything of something. But he doesn't want to know something of everything just to gather useless material knowledge. We find here Bhagavat Smritam. Everything is in relationship to Krishna, because everything is in relationship to Krishna. And he wants to learn everything in relationship to Krishna. He wants to learn things as they are. So we as devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement, we are meant also to know something of everything and everything of something. Now we're going to look specifically at what he's asking, because there's a lot of different verses here. Each one he's asking about different areas. So we're going to look today at these specific areas. But we should also keep in mind, as Srila Prabhupada writes in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Sanatana Goswami, do not think the Bhagavatam is just a series of questions and answers. I mean, it looks like that, and our god brother Suhocha Swami had a book where he analyzed which verses were answers to which questions. So he has this, I use this when I prepare for Bhakti Vaibhava classes, for teaching Bhakti Vaibhava classes. He lists, here's where the questions are asked, And here's where the answers are given. Because, like here, Vidura is asking a lot of questions. They can't be answered all in 2 minutes. It's amazing that Shukadeva Goswami, Maitreya Rishi, can even remember all of these questions. Right? If someone asks you 3 questions in a row, it's hard to remember, and he's asking, you know, how many questions here? 20, 30, 40 questions. And he answers them one after another after another. But Mahaprabhu said the Bhagavatam is not really just questions and answers. It is actually the form of God. Like we were talking yesterday about chanting, how chanting is Krishna. Krishna's name is Krishna. The Bhagavatam is also Krishna. So these questions and answers are revealing different parts of the form of the Lord and different aspects of the energy of the Lord with the purpose of our falling in love with the Lord. That is the purpose. We don't want to know something of everything and everything of something just so we can be very expert at controlling the material energy. That's not our purpose. That's why most people get an education, correct? Most people get an education so they can become an expert pseudo-material controller, so they can get a big house and a big car and 2 flat-screen TVs and a BMW and a Jaguar. And everybody says, oh, what a big person you are in the world. Attract an attractive mate and have intelligent children who also get big houses and big cars and flat-screen TVs. So we're not trying to get knowledge for that, for some illusory purpose. We're not even, as Prabhupada says in the second canto, the training is for a specific training for a livelihood. We're not really even trying to understand these things so we can function in the world. Even so we can function in the world as devotees. That's still kind of demigod life, you know. Let me be a good person in the world as a devotee. That's there. Those things are included. When you have $100, you also have $10. But we are trying to understand these things so we can increase in our affection for Krishna. That is the point. Because we want to always remember Krishna and never forget him, and we will only think about those things for which we have attachment. Which is the way it is. So this is meant to increase our attachment. All right, let's look at these specific things and what are they about and how they can increase our attachment for Krishna. Is that all right? So he says, yajñasya. He wants to know about, by the way, what time do we go to? 8:30?
9 o'clock.
What time, I'm not going to ask you. What time do we go to?
8:30.
8:30, that's what I thought. Very, very bad, bad, bad.
Class finishes at 8:30, but Christian can go to
9:30. Oh, okay, okay, right. So it was a tricky answer, all right.
Sunday, there's no hurry.
Sunday, there's no hurry.
No.
I'm sure somebody's preparing the Sunday feast.
Yeah.
But they're not here anyway, probably?
Yeah, well, Sunday feast in the evening.
So they have enough time, huh? Okay.
All right.
No hurry. Nobody has anything to do on Sunday. All right. So, yajñasya, about sacrifices. So, of course, Krishna devotes an entire chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. Which chapter does he devote to sacrifices? Well, it certainly talks about it in chapter 3. Well, okay, you can say throughout the Bhagavad Gita. But there's a specific chapter where Krishna is saying there's this sacrifice, this sacrifice, this sacrifice, this sacrifice. 4. Chapter 4. So in chapter 3, Krishna introduces, well, a little bit in chapter 2, but really in chapter 3, Krishna introduces the whole concept of sacrifice. Yagyartan karmano netra loko yam karmabandana taratam karmakontaya mukta sangai samatra. Yagyasyastasina santo. So it's really says, and I think one of the most important verses in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvagatam Brahma, Nitya Yagya Pratistitam. So Krishna is there establishing the principle of sacrifice, that even if you want to be happy in the world, you want to please the demigods, you have to do sacrifice. If you want liberation, mukta sangha samatra, you have to do sacrifice for Vishnu. If you don't do sacrifice, Yagya Shishtasina Santo, you'll be entangled in sin. So living happily, getting liberation, getting free from sin. But then he also gives this verse in 3:15. It's Sarvagatam Brahma, Nitya Yagya Pratistita. God is everywhere. Where are you going to find God? He's everywhere. You can say if he's everywhere, it's easy to find him. But in one sense, if he's everywhere, it's harder to find him. This was Hiranyakashipu's problem. So Krishna is saying you find him always, nitya yagya pratistitam.
He's always situated in acts of sacrifice. Stita means place, related to the English word to stay. And this is very similar to what Krishna tells Brahma in the second canto in the ninth chapter, where he says, tapasa ridayam sakshat atmaham tapaso. So, tapasa, austerity. Ridayam sakshat means, sakshat means directly, yes. Ridaya means heart. So tapasya is directly my heart. Atmaham tapasa, atma, myself, aham, I myself, by emphasis, atmaham, I myself, am tapasa. So we find God in sacrifice. Do you think that's odd, that you find God in sacrifice and austerity? Does that seem odd to you? God is Anandamaya Vyasad, Anandachinmaya Vyasad. He's all full of happiness. Sacrifice is trouble, yes? That's what we mean by sacrifice. When we mean sacrifice, I give up something that I like. I take some suffering voluntarily. Isn't that what we mean by sacrifice? You know, he went to war and sacrificed his arm. Yeah.
You can't have love without sacrifice.
You can't have love without sacrifice, exactly. There's no meaning to love without sacrifice. That's one reason why we say people should get married. And we say that there shouldn't be some sexual relationship outside of marriage. Because outside of marriage, there's no sacrifice. As soon as the person leaves their dirty socks on the floor, you can leave. Correct? Right? They forget to bring you flowers or something. They don't cook lasagna on Tuesday. And then you can go. There's no sacrifice involved. Therefore, there's no real love. It's all about me and what I like. Whereas love means that there's sacrifice. That's how we know somebody loves us. How do we know that somebody loves us? They perform some sacrifice for us. They're there for us. That's one of the main ways we know that somebody loves us. And when you sacrifice for someone you love, is it painful?
No,
it's extremely pleasurable. And it's interesting. I recently read an article about somebody who delayed having children. You know, and then she finally had children, and she said, wow, it's wonderful. I remember I had this experience with one devotee also who had children very late in life. And then he said, I wish I had known how nice this was. I would have had children earlier. Because people who look from the outside, they see, oh, it's all sacrifice. But when you're in the inside, you see, no, it's love. And the sacrifice, it's not even, you don't notice it generally. It's not visible. Just like in the fourth chapter, 424, Krishna says, if you're in proper consciousness, then the performer of sacrifice, the sacrifice itself, the consummation, it all becomes transcendent if you have the proper consciousness. So this is true even to some extent materially, which is fascinating. You know, if you have the proper consciousness, then you give your arm to your country and you're happy about it. You're proud of it. I gave my arm to my country. It's a source of happiness for you. Whereas if some robber came and cut off your arm, then you would be grieving your whole life. The same sacrifice, if you're forced to do it, or you do it in, you know, under obligation or something like that, it's just painful. But when you do it in love, you don't even notice that you're sacrificing. You don't think of it as a sacrifice. Isn't that a fact? Yes. It's only when love goes away that you think of it as a sacrifice. Then you say, oh, I did so much for you. What have you done for me? That means that love is gone. As soon as we start thinking like this, Krishna very nicely describes this in the 32nd chapter of the 10th canto. So as soon as we get a merchant mentality, I did this for you and this for you and this for you, like we're keeping score like a basketball game, you know, and I did this and this and this, and what have you done for me? We see this happen in the Hare Krishna movement, too. People come to the movement, and they say, you know, I did this, and 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 what did I get? You know, I just lived in an ashram on the floor with a sleeping bag, and then when I went in the world, I didn't have anything to show for it. What is the use of all this? So that's not the kind of sacrifice that Krishna wants from us. And therefore, Krishna describes sacrifice in the modes. So sacrifice in the mode of ignorance You make up your own kinds of sacrifice. You concoct them. What you're going to do. And your purpose of sacrifice and austerity is harmful to yourself and to others. You go through some trouble and difficulty, but your purpose of trouble and difficulty is violent. The sacrifice people make for eating meat and taking intoxication, and you know, you think the criminal also has to work hard to make a living. Isn't that correct? The criminal doesn't, it's not that they just sit there and the money pours into the sky. There, and they may be sacrificing their freedom to go to jail. They're making so many sacrifices to do this criminal activity. So that is in the mode of ignorance. And then sacrifices in the mode of passion are done with this scorekeeping. It's this merchant mentality, which Krishna says in a merchant mentality, there's no happiness, there's no love, there's no dharma, there's no friendship, nothing. Krishna says, better not to love at all than to be a merchant. So those in the mode of passion, their sacrifice is calculating. And they always want to give a little less than what they get. Because when you're doing merchant activities, you want things on sale, correct? Yes? No, you want everything on sale? We wait for the sales. And nobody is crying for the shopkeeper. When you buy something on sale, you don't go to the shopkeeper and say, is it okay that I'm getting this at half off? Is that, will you be able to pay your wages to your employees? You know? Should I pay full price anyway? Nobody says that. So sacrifices in the mode of passion are like that. You're looking for a sale. You want to give a little bit less than what you're getting. And your focus in the sacrifice is not the relationship, it's not love, but it's what I'm getting. My whole focus is what I'm getting. And of course, when what you get disappoints you, then you become angry and you become frustrated. And the bitterness and the anger and the angst in the world is all from sacrifices in the modes of ignorance and passion. And then there's sacrifice in the mode of goodness. So in sacrifice in the mode of goodness, you're sacrificing just because it's the right thing to do. That's a little different than sacrifice in the mode of passion, which may also have some concept of duty. But duty in the mode of passion is, you know, how I will get my fruit and how I will get acclaim. So sacrifice in the mode of goodness is, it's the right thing to do. It makes me feel good inside. It makes me feel balanced. It makes me feel in harmony with the creation. And so those who sacrifice in goodness, they experience some actual happiness. And for them, they don't distinguish so much between the sacrifice and the fruit. And those in bhakti, they're sacrificing out of love for Krishna. And for them, the sacrifice and the fruit are all the same. The sacrifice is the fruit. The act of giving to Krishna in love is the pleasure. They're not sacrificing for some future pleasure. And if Krishna returns to them, they become disturbed. Just the opposite of the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance, which is very fruitive and external-centered. One in bhakti, they're getting happiness from giving to Krishna. And if Krishna says, oh, I want to give you something back. No, I don't want to take something back from you. Like that story when Sanatan Goswami wanted to invite Rupa Goswami for prasadam. He wanted to invite his brother over for prasadam, but he was living as a mendicant. He didn't have anything. But he had this desire. So this young, beautiful girl from the village, she comes with all this food. And she said, my dear Babaji, my dear sir, here's some food for you if you'd like to cook and prepare for Krishna. Oh, very nice. Where did you get all this food, all this opulent food? And she said, oh, there was a wedding, and this was left. We didn't need it. It was extra, so you can have it. And Sanatan Goswami was thinking, that was an exceptionally beautiful girl. And I don't remember seeing her around. Yeah. It's such an exceptionally beautiful girl. You'd notice, right? Someone is exceptionally beautiful or exceptionally ugly or exceptionally something. We notice. And he thought, she's exceptionally beautiful, but I don't remember seeing her. Oh, well, whatever. So he's preparing this whole meal, and Rupa Goswami comes, and he eats it. And then he says, my dear Sanatan, you don't generally have this much variety of opulent food. Where did you get it from? And he said, oh, some village girl had something extra from a wedding. Oh, village girl? What village girl? What is her name? Because they knew everybody in the village, dear, all the gentle and the ruffians, they would come to Rupa and Sanatan to ask advice about everything. We're talking here something of everything, everything of something. They would ask them all kinds of questions, even about how to deal with their grahastha problems and anything. Yeah. So they knew everyone. And Rupa Goswami says, well, who is it? And he said, I don't know. I didn't recognize her. I didn't ask her her name. What did she look like? And Sanatan starts describing what she looked like. And Rupa Goswami says, wait a minute. That was Srimati Radharani. And then, you know, Rupa and Sanatan were both lamenting. Why have we taken service from Radharani? Why have we taken service? We're supposed to be serving her. We're supposed to be serving Krishna. We're not supposed to be taking service from Krishna. So this is sacrifice in bhakti. Sacrifice in bhakti. One is so much enjoying giving to Krishna because it's love that the sacrifice is nectar. And if someone says, why are you sacrificing? You say, what? What are you talking about? What's sacrificing? I'm not sacrificing anything. I'm simply enjoying. Right? And it's some concept of a reward. It's like, what? Why would I be doing it for a reward? So this is the kind of sacrifice we want to do in bhakti. But we need to recognize all the different kinds of sacrifice to make sure that our sacrifice is correct. You know, why do we need to know these things both from this? Why don't we only study sacrifice in bhakti? Why do we also have to study sacrifice in sattva, rajas, and tamas? Because we have to make sure, we have to be able to distinguish. You follow? If you cannot distinguish, if all you know is transcendence, you're not going to be able to get out of darkness. That's why the Isha-Upanishad says, vidya avidya, sambhutim asambhutim. You have to know both. If you're sick, you have to know what is healthy, but you also have to know what is sickness. The doctor has to study both sickness and health. They cannot only study health. You have to be able to recognize, is this Krishna or is this Maya? One has to be able to distinguish. Because it's very easy to have a weed grow up next to the bhakti creeper that looks just like the bhakti creeper. And one can be doing a sacrifice in Rajagun, happens all the time, and think it's bhakti. Happens all the time. Or even a sacrifice in tamaguna and think it's bhakti. We've seen this. We've seen devotees do sacrifice in tamaguna, where they do kinds of sacrifice that harm their bodies and harm others, and are actually violent in the name of bhakti. You know, I was in a place sometime, somewhere. Long, long, long time ago, somewhere. Where they were trying to build a new temple. And they didn't have the money for the temple. So some of the authorities were going to the devotees, take out a second, third mortgage on your house. You know, sacrifice for the temple. And some of the devotees came to me and they said, we don't want to take out a second and third mortgage on our house. They said, this will put us in great difficulty. We'll have to each, you know, she said, I'll have to get a job right now. I'm not working. She said, my husband will have to get at least a second job. We won't have any time with our children. She said, we won't even have any time to go to the temple anymore. And then she said to me, she said, we already gave $25,000 to buy the land that they told us was a loan that they would repay. I said, did you get it back? She says, no, but that's all right. It's for Krishna. I said, how much do they want you to give from second and third mortgage? She says, $250,000. And she said, the authorities are saying to us, what's the matter with you? Don't you have faith in Krishna? So this is asking for sacrifice in tamagun. That's not even rajagun, that's tamagun. So we should be able to distinguish. This is important, correct? In ourself, because if you sacrifice in tamagun, will you get the result in bhakti? No. You'll get simply misery. And if you sacrifice in Rajagun also, Krishna says, when you sacrifice in Rajagun, you don't get the results of sacrifice. You don't find God who's eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. Because although God is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice, you still have to do the sacrifice properly to find him there. He's there, but how are you going to find him? So therefore we must know all of these. Okay, let's go on. Yogasya. And here Prabhupada's giving in the word-to-word of the passive mystic powers. So it's very interesting that Srila Prabhupada often says that the goal of the yogis is to control their senses. Now again, we are also interested in sense control. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pasta vegam. We start in the nectar of instruction takes you from human life to Radhakund in 11 verses. It's a very interesting book. It's one of the, I've analyzed so far 20 different explanations of the progress of bhakti, and they're all a little different from one another. And nectar of instruction is one of them, from just controlling your senses to radical. 11 verses, Hare Krishna. So we're also interested in sense control and yoga. We're also interested in yoga. Yes, it's bhakti yoga. It's not that we have no interest in yoga, just like we have some interest in sacrifice. What does Prabhupada mean that the goal of the yogis is sense control? So last night we were talking about japa, and I have one devotee friend who was a born mystic yogi. He was actually born in a family of devotees, and when he was very, very little boy, spontaneously he could leave his body and travel into other planets. I mean, he didn't know that everybody couldn't do that. You know, if you're a child, you think whatever you can do or can't do, it's just normal. But then he found he would talk to people about it and they thought it was a little peculiar. And he just naturally was able to be aware of the flow of prana and the chakras and the kundalini, and his kundalini spontaneously awoke. He's a very nice devotee, by the way. Very, very nice, solid, sober person. Actually, I know two devotees like this. I'm sure there's many more. But then he did something very interesting. He decided at one point in his life, when there was some difficulty, that he was going to concentrate just on chanting Hare Krishna. But he chanted Hare Krishna like a mystic yogi. His idea of being attentive was mechanical sense control. So what he would do is he would chant a mantra, and if he wasn't completely focused on the sound for that mantra, he would chant it over again. He wouldn't count it. And he would chant 16 rounds like that. But not with affection. You understand? There was no affection. There was no attachment. It was just, I'm going to hear this mantra. And after he was able to chant 16 rounds, hearing every mantra through mechanical sense control, then he increased 32, 48, 64. 100, 120. And he was chanting all day like that. And pretty soon he developed all kinds of mystic powers. He was able to read everybody's mind and tell everybody's emotions and, I mean, all kinds of really far out things. And he was able to take the kundalini up through the Sahasra chakra, and he was able to go to the Brahmajyoti and all these interesting. And after doing this for many years, he actually, the kundalini like burned his subtle body and made it so that if he chanted anything, he would have extreme pain in his whole subtle body. If he would just say Krishna, all of a sudden he would experience like electric shocks and pain. You know, and we were talking about it a lot, and like, that is not the way of bhakti. The way of bhakti is not, I'm going to control my senses, I'm going to control my mind so that I'm going to master Krishna. I'm going to have Krishna under my control. I'm going to have the mantra under my control. I'm going to have the universe under my control. And Krishna said to him, no, not like that. That is not the way. So that is the kind of yoga we are not interested in. And we see, again, devotees sometimes make this mistake and they try to achieve sense control through some mechanical process. You know, if they're not an accomplished yogi, then they try to do it just through repression. I'm sure we've all met devotees who tried to control their senses through repression. What is the result of trying to control your senses through repression? Anger, which is the younger brother of lust. And what else?
Frustration.
What else?
Fear.
Fear. Definitely fear. What else?
Disappointment.
What else?
Breakdown.
Often fall down also. you know, person tries to control through repression, and then instead of having some sense enjoyment in a pious, legitimate way, then they end up having some sense enjoyment in an impious, illegitimate way. Or hard-heartedness. They become like a stone. They can't feel anything at all, which, of course, cannot last. And they'll often vacillate between anger, hard-heartedness, and fall down. You know, they'll go through this cycle of, you know, okay, hard-hearted. Hard-hearted, fall down. So that's again in tamagun. You know, thinking I'm going to control the senses like that. And looking for these powers is very much in rajagun. I'm going to be bigger and better than anybody else. I'm going to control, you know, instead of controlling through having a big bank account and knowing all the right politicians and building a big building, I'm going to control through mystic power. But it's the same basic mentality. Or even if one takes up yoga because they want to merge in the Brahma Jyoti, which is in Sattvagun, they want to become liberated. It's still very much about me. So in what sense does the bhakti yogi practice yoga? In the original sense of yoga, which is to link with the Supreme. And interestingly enough, in the Bhagavatam, we have many instances of persons using yoga in bhakti. Like we use sacrifice in bhakti also. I mean, we also literally do a fire sacrifice. But we have examples of Dhruva Maharaj, who was using the yogic asanas and pranayams in order to more clearly fix his mind on Vishnu. And we have so many examples like this, correct? Yes. So that is all right. Just like Rupa Goswami says, Jnana Karma Anavritam, that these things should not cover bhakti, but they can be used in bhakti. It says, Anya Bilasita Sunyam, no external motives. I'm not coming to the temple because I want money or fame or something like that. I'm coming because I want love. Sunya, that should be zero. But Jnana Karma Anavritam, those don't have to be zero. We can do actions, we can have knowledge, we can have anadi, means another, we can have yoga. But they shouldn't be covering bhakti. And we shouldn't think that it's by the yoga process that the yoga process is necessary for bhakti. We shouldn't think that doing asanas and pranayama, etc., is necessary for bhakti. Sometimes devotees will preach like that. You can only chant good japa if you breathe like this. You can only chant good japa if you sit like this. Then that's covering bhakti. And nor should we become distracted by these side aspects of yoga. But we definitely want to perform yoga in the sense of linking with Krishna in love. That kind of yoga. And we can also adopt some of the other practices of yoga if they are helpful and they do not cover our bhakti. Okay, naishkarmyasya. So naishkarmyasya is talking about karma yoga. Karma yoga. Which, interesting here, Prabhupada translates it of knowledge. But without the karma palatyaga, giving up the fruits of karma. So karma yoga is a way of elevation where I act like an ordinary person, but not to enjoy the fruits, rather to become liberated. Now, karma yoga is intrinsically in the mode of goodness if one is actually doing karma yoga. Because otherwise you're doing karma or vikarma. In one sense, they're all action. You know, vikarma is activities done for immediate satisfaction of the senses and the mind, regardless of the means. That's vikarma. And the satisfaction that one gets may also be sinful. So getting some sort of physical, mental satisfaction as quickly as possible, with as little endeavor as possible, and without caring how I get it. And without caring what is the results of what I get, and without even necessarily caring what kind of satisfaction it is. As long as it's immediate satisfaction, who cares? If it's good for me, good for others. If my means of getting it is good for me, good for others. If the result will be good for me, good for others. I just want it now in any form. So that's vikarma. And then karma is I want to do pious activities. This is in Rajagun. I want to do pious activities, and my means also must be pious, and my result is going to be pious, but it's all about me being bigger and better than everybody else and being noticed by everybody else. So that's karma. So Naishkarma has to be in Sattvagun. Although it may look similar, the person in Tamagun is going to work, the person in Rajagun is going to work, and the person in Sattvagun is going to work. But in Sattvagun, one is thinking, I'm not looking for a fruit, karma palatyaga. I renounce the fruit. What is the fruit? To be happy in this world and happy in the next world in Swarga. That's the fruit of karma. So I renounce that fruit. I'm not doing it for that purpose. I'm not being a good wife, so I'll have a happy marriage and go to heaven. I'm not being a good husband, so I'll have a happy marriage and go to heaven. I'm not being a good Brahmin Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra, which was in the previous verse. So I'm not doing my varna, I'm not doing my occupation, which is varna. I'm not doing my life cycle, which is ashram, so that I'll be happy in this world and go to heaven. I'm doing it so that I'll enter into the Brahman. I'm doing it because it's the right thing to do in harmony with the universe that will liberate me. So that's Naishkarmya. Of course, we also have a kind of Naishkarmya. We also have an akarma. There's akarma, there's akarma, karma, and vikarma. So we in bhakti also have a kind of akarma, or Naishkarmya, where we also karma palatyaga. We also renounce the fruits of our action. But the difference is that our goal is not mukti. Our goal is prema. So we are being a good wife, a good husband, a good engineer, a good mother, a good father, a good daughter, a good son, not to enjoy this world, not for some immediate enjoyment, not for some long-term heavenly enjoyment, and not even for liberation, not even for self-purification. But we are doing it so Krishna will smile. So Krishna will say, well done, good and faithful servant. We see our family members as Krishna's servants that are given to us to care for in his service. Just like the temple president takes care of the brahmacharis, brahmacharinis in the temple. We see our home as Krishna's home, just like the temple residency, the temple is Krishna's home. We see our body as Krishna's temple. We clean our body just like we clean the altar in our home. So we are, apparently, it looks like we are doing, you know, we are being a dutiful child, a dutiful spouse, a dutiful parent, a dutiful citizen, a dutiful worker. It looks like that. But really, the only purpose is so Krishna will smile. We're not interested in, oh, my mother will be happy with me, my husband will be happy with me. We want Krishna to be happy with me. So that is a very deep kind of Naishkarmya, by which one becomes completely free, Mukta Sangha Samatra. That is actual liberation, whereas the liberation desired by those in Sattvagun, Avasuddha Buddhya, their intelligence is still not purified because they're still on the me platform. Then Sankhasya. So Sankhasya, analytical studies. So this, of course, refers to Jnana and Jnana Yoga. So in Jnana, there is, of course, mode of ignorance, Jnana. How to make a bomb and blow up a subway, you know, that's mode of ignorance, Gyan. How to manipulate people to get them to do what you want. How to trick people, how to fool people. What they call them, con artists, right? Con from confidence. They get your confidence, they get you to trust them, and then they stab you in the back and steal your money. But that is also a kind of knowledge. You have to understand something of psychology. The scientists also study some kind of sankhya. They study Sankhya. Just like I read an article about food scientists. So the food scientists, they study all the different tastes of food. And they actually study when we chew, how much jaw pressure makes us think I want to eat more of that. Because we're engineered to want to eat food that's very fresh and healthy. That's how our bodies are designed. So one way of freshness is crunchiness. That's how we tell something's fresh. It's crunchy. So there's a certain measurement of crunchiness. You can measure the teeth coming together at what speed and etc. and how we understand crunchy. And what combination, especially of fat, salt, and sugar, So there's a certain combination of fat, salt, sugar, and crunchiness that if we get that particular combination, we just keep wanting to eat more and more of something. So they figure this out, you know, and what particular kind of tastes and smells will make us just eat and eat and eat and eat and eat. And then they create food. They actually create the food. They don't grow it. Like on the airplane when I was coming here, they were selling Pringles. So Pringles is a good example of a created food. It's not potatoes, you know. It's not cut potatoes. It's a mixed together of all different things, and they make it look like a potato, you know, and they take all these chemicals. They have to use some real food, you know. They're not so clever that they can do it without using anything that's real. Even the chemicals are coming from the earth. Even if they find the chemicals, they can't just manufacture it out of the void. And they're creating this artificial food that simulates real food and that tricks the psychology and the biology and the saliva and the olfactory into thinking, oh, this is very tasty, healthy food. So that's a kind of GAN, isn't it? I mean, isn't it? It's a kind of GAN. They're very intelligent. And they're studying the nature of the world. They're looking at Sankhya. What are the elements? What are the chemicals? How does everything work? How does everything interrelate? But they're doing it in tamaguna. They're doing it in tamaguna. So simply that they can make people obese and sick and make money off people's sickness. Or the people who study how to make the perfect cigarette. You know, I know one devotee who makes her living advertising cigarettes. I told her, you have to give up this job. So that's gyan and tamagun. How can I convince people to buy cigarettes? How can I? They also have gyan, yes? They study psychology. Like Prabhupada would note the advertisement for cool cigarettes. They would have these big billboards of a waterfall, right? And of course, beautiful men and women. Usually one man and two women. Or one of the billboards, there's a woman on the back of a motorcycle with a man in front, and then there's another man on the sidewalk, and she's looking at that man. You know? Cool. So they study people's psychology. You know, what will get people to smoke? So that's a kind of gyan, but it's in the mode of ignorance. Then you have gyan in the mode of passion. So gyan in the mode of passion is they study how they can build a skyscraper so it won't fall over. You know, how they can get... how they can grow the perfect crops and get the right hybrids, and how they can make this and that in the world. How they can cure this and that disease. This is very much gyan in the mode of passion. You know, this Bill Gates who wants to eradicate all the communicable diseases before he dies. This is very much gyan in the mode of passion. I'm going to be the big person I'm going to be the hero and save the world. And they'll put a statue up of me in the park. And I'll be in the history books. And I am good. And they also have a lot of gyan. And then there's gyan in the mode of goodness. Gyan in the mode of goodness is you understand the world so that you can be a part of it. You can be in balance. You can be in harmony. You understand how to be forgiving. You understand how to be compassionate. You understand how to be simple. You understand how to be satisfied. Just like Krishna and Balaram at the Gurukul, they learned how to be satisfied even when there was some strong desire. But what kind of gyan do we want in bhakti? We want to know all about Krishna. We want to know, what does Krishna look like? What does Krishna eat? What kind of crunchy foods would Krishna like? You know? We want to know, what does Krishna wear? We want to know, how does Krishna manage the world? And we even want to know about this world so we can build a temple, right? So we can drive a car for Krishna, so we can manage a bank account for Krishna. So that is the kind of sankhya that we want. And then tantram here, Prabhupada makes the point that tantram here means deity worship. Of course, even that can be done in the different modes. Right? A person can keep a deity just to make money. Like Bhaktisiddhanta said, use the shalagram to crack nuts. And we see this, the altar is dirty. Right? There's one analogy like that in the Bhagavatam, like the altar in the house of a neglectful brahmana. You know, so the altar is dirty. They put some cloth on the altar that they clean maybe once in a year. You know, deities are all dull. But, oh, here's my temple, come give me money, and they have a big house in the back with their servants. And then one can do deity worship in the mode of passion. You know, let me worship the deity for, you know, a house along the sea, Jai Jagadishari. You know. Please cure my aunt's cancer, and please help me pass my exams. I remember I was at one temple where this one student comes with her exam results in an envelope, and she puts it on the altar, and she's praying to the deities. And I'm thinking, it's too late now. You think he's going to change the numbers inside the envelope? That's in the mode of passion. And then one can be worshiping the form of the Lord again for one's purification and one's liberation. And one can be worshiping the form of the Lord because there's Krishna and he's so wonderful. And I want to take care of him and I want to feed him and I want to bathe him. So we should learn all of these things in relationship, Bhagavat Smritam, in relationship to Krishna. And then the devotee has everything, sacrifice, yoga, proper action, proper knowledge, proper worship, all in bhakti. And then we are truly balanced person in the greater sense. So it is incumbent upon us to learn all of this, but this verse is also directly Krishna. It's not simply some questions and answers, it is directly Krishna. And if we enter into it properly, then we can see Krishna even in these apparently mundane things, because sarva kalamidam brahma, Krishna is ultimately everything. So this is our purpose. Everything we study, everything we do, we should see, how is this related to Krishna? How am I doing it? Am I doing it in the modes of nature, or am I doing it in bhakti, in relationship to Krishna? So, questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions, chastisements? Yes, friend. I get them sometimes. I might as well ask one.
Mother, you just explained that when you pray to the deity that I want this job, so please give me the job, please give me the job. But if you say, like, if you're looking for a job or you're looking for a better thing, and then you pray to Krishna that if I deserve for this, then give me, otherwise don't give me. So,
So is there a way in bhakti to ask Krishna for a job? I think that's your question. Is there a bhakti way?
No. I'm asking, like, is that coming under the mode of goodness or coming under...
So first of all, it says in the Bhagavatam, whether you have sarva kama or moksha kama or akama, you should go to Krishna. So even if it is in the mode of passion, even if you're in the mode of ignorance, you should go to Krishna. We don't say, first you have to come to Sattva-gun. I had a godbrother who was preaching like this. He was saying, you're not allowed to chant Hare Krishna unless you're first following the regulative principle. That's not true. Otherwise, we couldn't do Harinam on the street. And go to each person, are you vegetarian? Okay, you can chant with us. But not you. You're drinking beer. No. You can't chant. So you don't have to first be at Sattva-gun. That's not necessary. What devotees went immediately from Tamagun to Bhakti? Magrari the hunter? Mm. Who else? All the disciples of Srila Prabhupada were in Tamagun before? No. You are very kind, Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Sometimes I think in trying to glorify Prabhupada, we go a little too far. Prabhupada's glorious because he brought everybody from Tamagun to Bhakti. And maybe not everybody was in Tamagun. Maybe some of them were in Sattva-gun first.
Jagai and Madai?
I mean, I was in Tamagun. That's another thing, but anyway, not everybody.
Valmiki,
yes. The prostitute with Haridas Thakur. She was definitely in Tamagun. So one can go directly from Tamagun to Bhakti. One doesn't have to go from Tamagun to Rajagun to Sattva-gun and then to Bhakti. So even if you are in Rajagun, even if you're thinking, I want to get a job because I want to have enough money and I want to have a house and I want to have this and I want to have that, better to ask Krishna for it. Because if you don't ask Krishna for it, you're going to be asking somebody for it. Because the desire is there. When we say anyabhilasita sunyam, we don't mean artificially. We don't mean that you pretend that you don't have any desires. That Krishna doesn't like that. Krishna would much rather that you be authentically fallen than you be artificially elevated. Much rather. He'd much rather deal with you authentically. And he can't deal with you at all unless you're authentic. Just like as a teacher, I had this one student who came from a part of the world where plagiarism, they don't understand. I don't think they have a word in their language for plagiarism. You know, it's using someone else's stuff is just, that's what you do. So she couldn't grasp this concept that you have to write your own work. She turned in an essay to me, and I thought, this is really good. And then I thought, it's also really familiar. And what I realized the problem is, when you turn in work that's not yours, is that the teacher can't help you learn anything. When she turns in work that's hers, then I can say, oh, this is really good, do more of this. And this is a problem, you have to fix this. But when she turns in work that's actually Shakespeare's, I can't help her progress. So if I go to Krishna and I say, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundari, Kavitamba, Jagadishagam, Mama Janmani, Janmani Swari. But in my heart is going, I really want that new red jaguar. I'll impress all the girls. Or I really just want to get out of here. I just want to go to Swarga. If that's what's going on in my heart, then Krishna can't, he can't deal with us. So much, 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 much better to go to Krishna and say, I want these things. Now, if you want to be in bhakti, the way that you do it is something like this. I mean, you have to find your own way, but it's something like this. Where you go to Krishna and say, Krishna, I know I'm only supposed to ask you for service, but that's not what's going on in my heart. What's going on in my heart is I really want a job. I'm scared. I'm scared that if I don't have a job, I'm going to be poor and nobody will love me and I'll be, you know, homeless on the street, eating out of trash cans, and I'm just really scared. And therefore, I really want to have a job. But I know, Lord, you know, that that's not really very intelligent. And if I was intelligent, I would just say, Krishna, let me serve you and trust that you'll take care of me, whether you take care of me through a job or some other means. So you please deal with my desire for a job in whatever way is best for my bhakti. Whether you want to fulfill it by giving me a good job, whether you want to fulfill it by showing that I can be maintained without a job. However you want to do it. That's up to you. But you please help me with this desire that I have. So that's a very nice way to do it in bhakti. You may find some other way to do it in bhakti, but mostly it's saying, Krishna, I have this desire. Please be honest with Krishna. I mean, the key thing is honesty. If you're not, you don't have to be honest with everybody in the world. It's not that you have to tell everybody in the world all the garbage in your heart. We really don't want to know. But we have to be honest with Krishna because he already knows anyway. Riddheshir Janatistati. He already knows what's going on. The only person we're fooling is ourselves anyway. So if we go to Krishna and say, Krishna, I want this, and I'm sorry, I know I'm not supposed to want it, and I know I'm a fool, but I want it anyway. Now you please do with this however you like. I will trust you that you deal with this as you like. And ultimately, please, give me the best thing and free me from all of these desires. So that's a very nice way to pray. But even if you can't do that, and you're like, Krishna, I want a job, I better go to Krishna. Because what happens is, if you go to Krishna, eventually you'll start being interested in Krishna. Is that okay?
Yeah, but that's what I was asking before. I was asking that if you say to Krishna that I want this job, but don't give me this job until you think that I'm fit for these things. Like, if you think that it's going to disturb in my bhakti, then don't give me this job, but if you think that
very nice.
Progress me to help me in my bhakti.
That's very nice. That's just like you could go, if you're an employee and you go to your boss and you say, I have this plan to advance the company business, and if you like the plan, please approve it, and if you don't like the plan, I give it up. So that's fine. You can go to Krishna and say, Krishna, I have a plan for advancing in bhakti, and my plan is that I get this job, I marry this person, I live in this place. And if you approve of this plan, you know, then I'm bringing it to you for your approval. if my purpose of the plan is that I want it to, for me to advance in bhakti and for me to help the world in bhakti. But again, one has to be honest. Maybe I really want to get this job and marry this person and move to this place because I think I'll be materially happier. And maybe it will also help me in bhakti kind of on the side. So one has to be very scrupulously introspective. And if you're scrupulously introspective and honest, the kind of reciprocation you get from Krishna will be very nice. You will enjoy it. It will be very sweet. Krishna won't deal with you in some heavy way. He won't smash your stuff and take your stuff away if you deal with him very honestly. He just won't. He'll deal with you very, very, very kindly and very softly because you're dealing with him very kindly and very softly. So just, and you can ask, if you're not sure what your motives are, you can ask Krishna, what are my motives for this? Show me. Why do I want this job? I mean, of course I want a job. Everybody has their job. That's not true. Ask, what's my motives? What's driving me? Please show me. And then you can go to Krishna and say, Krishna, my motive is fear. My motive is status. My motive is, I don't know. Help me. And you'll be very, very happy if you pray to Krishna like that. You'll be really, 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 really happy. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Mataji, if the person has this mystic abilities, how can they use that in bhakti?
If they have mystic abilities, how can they use it in bhakti? I don't know. Hopefully I don't get to find out the answer to that question. I really don't know. At least in this lifetime, I have no chance of developing any mystic abilities.
Because there are some people that, they're sometimes even attracted to Krishna consciousness.
For sure. There are people who have mystic abilities. Definitely. I don't know. It's not something I have any experience with. I don't like to talk about things with which I have no experience. Yes.
Most of us, like, we're always planning for future. Like, we want to do this with kids, with ourselves, with our spiritual lives, how we want to settle things in this area of our life and that. So how can we make sure that all our planning is, you know, there is always Bhagavad Smrita, always there in that planning?
Mm. Well, first of all, be careful you're not invested in the future. If you're invested in the future and you're unconscious of the present, you're in the mode of passion. So if instead of relishing your relationship with Krishna now, you're saying, well, I'm not relishing my relationship with Krishna now, but if I do this plan and that plan and that plan, I'll relish my relationship with Krishna in the future. Be very careful you never do that, because all you ever have is now. And that's very much like the person, you know, Prahlad Maharaj speaking to his friends. They said, after we do this, after we do this, after we do this, then we'll be Krishna conscious. And that's also very much like what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes as the neophyte position in Madhurya Kadambini, which he calls indecision, where the person is saying, should I get married, should I not get married? Should I live in Vrindavan, should I live someplace else? Should I do this, should I do that? Because that the materialists, especially in passion and ignorance, not so much in goodness, although a little bit in goodness too, They're thinking that their happiness is dependent upon their externals. All their happiness is external. It's all senses and mind. And they're thinking that in order to get happiness, I need to arrange my external situation in a particular way. My house, my furniture, the people in my life, you know, how much money I have, all these things I have. And once I get it all arranged, then I will be happy. And so they're always, it's this carrot in front of the donkey, you know. Once I get it all arranged, then I will be happy. And every once in a while, things get arranged nicely for a short period of time. Yes? Every once in a while, everything works. Everybody's getting along in the family, and you're healthy, and there's enough money in the bank, and you like your job, and your house is clean and orderly. But it doesn't stay that way. Have you noticed that? You know, you get there and you're like, okay, got it. Now I can be happy. Oh, you know, the toilet breaks or something. Oops. And devotees often substitute for now I can be happy to now I can be Krishna conscious. They keep the same mentality. You know, well, if I just go to Vrindavan, if I just go to that festival, if I just hang around that particular saintly person, you know, if I just sit in this way to chant japa, then I will be happy. In Krishna consciousness. Then I will become Krishna conscious. Whereas the time to become Krishna conscious is always now. So as part of what we do now, we may have to make some plan. Part of what we do now may be to buy an airplane ticket. That may be part of what I do now, although it's something for the future. But if I'm buying the airplane ticket thinking, when I get on the airplane, then I will be happy. But if I'm thinking, Krishna, I'm buying this ticket for you now. May you be pleased with me now. I may never go on the plane. So many things can happen. So Prabhupada talks about change the plan making to make plans for preaching. He calls that Krishna Kama. And it's one of Prabhupada's instructions for how to conquer lust. He says that our material lust is we make plans for sense gratification. Instead, make plans for the mission. Make plans for preaching. But be careful that when you do that, you don't just substitute when that happens, then I'll be Krishna conscious. So be very careful that when you're making plans for preaching, which you should definitely do, always find your happiness in your minute-to-minute connection with Krishna, not in some hope for the future. In ignorance, we lament the past, and in passion, we hanker for the future, and in goodness, one is satisfied with the present. And spiritually, you know, in the spiritual world, there's only the present. So that's... Is that all right? Does that make sense to you? That was the way Krishna told Arjuna to fight. Yes.
Mataji, so if we make plans for preaching and we're trying our best to do something to please Guru, please Srila Prabhupada.
Yes.
And then when we implement that plan and with that result, should we be attached to that result or not?
Absolutely not. Not even one iota. Your attachment should be to pleasing Guru and Krishna at every moment. And the result moment is should be just a moment like every other moment. The exaltation that we feel in getting a good result should be something you're experiencing at every moment. Yes?
I just have a similar question, but just a more... question is like, when you try to preach Krishna consciousness in your own family, like for example, your cousin, your brother,
mm-hmm.
they're not convinced at all, or they may be convinced, but they don't want to follow. So, should you still continue to preach them, or you just stop?
That's a very good question. You know, if it's people that we don't have to deal with regularly, then we just stop. That's the position of the Majjhima, those who are opposed. They leave them alone. So if there's people who are opposed to Krishna consciousness, we just leave them alone. We don't associate with them. If they're innocent, we try to help them according to what they're able to take. That requires some discrimination. How to preach to someone at their level. Now, what do you do if somebody who's actually inimical is a family member or a co-worker, someone you have to deal with all the time? And you can't just walk away from them. What do you do with that? And then you have to really be a secret agent. You can always give them prasadam. And I had a really interesting experience recently in New York. I had a doctor appointment. And usually if I'm seeing a doctor for the first time, I don't like to go in a sari and tilak in case they don't like devotees. So I was going incognito. And I was walking alone through New York. it was kind of odd because I'm used to going in a sari and tilak, and I'm used to people staring at me. So it was kind of odd to be just one of the crowd. It was a little peculiar. And being alone and not wearing a sari, I wasn't going to have like a whole Harinam party going down the street. So what was I going to do? So I decided that I was going to chant very loudly in my mind. So I was singing in my mind very loudly as I walked through the streets. And I had some very interesting experiences doing that. All kinds of people were just looking at me and smiling. Not everybody, but a lot of people. You know, they just like, people would, as I'd come to them, they would light up. And one person ended up talking to me for some length and asked me, what is your name? And I said, Urmila. He said, Urmila, what is that? I said, oh, it's the name of a goddess. He said, oh, is that in Krishna? Like, oh, that's cool. And it kept happening like that. And my vision of the people I saw was also really amazing. How I perceived everything was quite interesting. So you can do a Harinam party in your mind, and you will affect people around you. So if you have to be with somebody who's inimical, and you can't openly talk about Krishna, and you can't openly try to convince them, you know, they won't even be convinced to give up beef or something like that. You know, you can't even talk about it. Stop telling me what to eat. You can give them prasadam and you can chant loudly in your mind, and don't think that doesn't mean anything. It means a lot. Sometimes you can bring those people to the temple for some sort of a festival. Sometimes they'll come for some things. Find some way. Consider that Krishna has put you in the association of that person for some reason. And then that person is accumulating what's called agyata sukriti. And when they accumulate enough agyata sukriti, then they will be able to actually start bhakti. And maybe you're Krishna's secret agent for that purpose.
It's like my whole cousin family, like the maternal uncle and the other cousin family, they all came from Sydney to here, like they all just migrated here.
Mm.
So I was thinking why they came here, you know, there is some
purpose.
Purpose. And but they ask me always to open this thing, open this business with this meat and all that. I still try to convince them, no, it's not good. Then they came up with another idea, and then another idea. So still I'm like struggling to convince them, but finally I say that we all together here only for one purpose, to chant the name of the Rams.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu.
Mataji, so, I mean, obviously you answered that earlier. We shouldn't be attached to the result of when we're pleasing. So
you should be attached to the result of pleasing Krishna.
Yes. Oh, well.
That you should be very attached to.
So I'll just give you an example.
But like, you don't be attached to the result of, you know, did the preparation turn out nice? Krishna might be pleased by your banana peels.
Yeah.
Obviously, you try to make a nice preparation.
In terms of preaching, for example, when we do Bhagavad Gita introduction courses.
Okay.
So from there, the process is from there, say 20 people came. And after that, we try to encourage them to join the Bhakti Bhiksha group.
Okay.
So if out of 20, say 5 joined.
Okay.
And 15 didn't join.
Okay.
So should there be a disappointment that why didn't the 15 join?
No, there should be an understanding that Bhagavad Gita 7.3 is true.
Yeah.
What is Bhagavad Gita 7.3? Oh, Krishna was right. Krishna told the truth. He knew what he was talking about. I mean, obviously, we want everybody to become Krishna conscious, But we're not the doer.
Sometimes it was, I mean, recently I've stopped thinking too much about it. I said, look, in my hands is only what I can do.
I really have to memorize this one quote where Prabhupada talks about how we're not really interested in this big thing and that big thing. He said, all the things we're doing is just, I've got to memorize this. All the things we're doing is just to have some practical application of the philosophy. Something like that. Just to have some field where we can practically apply the philosophy. He says, if you just talk to one person about Krishna in the day, your day is successful. So of course, I mean, come on. If you can do something externally big, like Narada Muni, who convinces the Haryasvas and the, what was the show? What was the other group? 10,000 sons of Daksha and then 1,000 sons of Daksha. Well, the one with the little Haryasvas. I don't remember the other name of the other group. Anyway, so Krishna would certainly be pleased, you know, if you could get everybody in Perth to be floating in Krishna Prema, I mean, that would be really nice. But if you get one person floating in Krishna Prema, that would be really nice too. If you just get yourself floating in Krishna Prema, that would be really nice. So that's... Ram's pleased with Jatayu, who just abjectly failed. Krishna's pleased with the cowherd boys. He said, go and do what? Go to the brahmanas and ask for food. They didn't even get it. The brahmanas didn't even say anything. The boys came back, and Kavi Karnapur says, they said, oh, how has nectar become salty? How has your infallible order failed to produce the result? And Krishna says, oh, that's the way it is when you beg. Sometimes people give, sometimes people don't. But would you think Krishna was pleased with them? Was he pleased? Did Krishna say, what is this? I told you to go beg. You didn't do any, you didn't get anything. But, where's the result? What useless coward boys? Did he say that? No. Did Ram say to Jatayu, you didn't stop Ravana? What's the use? Did he say that? No. Don't measure like that.
And actually, once I stopped thinking about it, things fell into place.
Now, isn't that interesting? That's not our business. It isn't. We can't control it. That's not our business. Our business is, am I pleasing Guru and Krishna now? That letter to Jayapataka Swami, surrender to Krishna means whatever is meant to be, that I am doing. Let me do it with my full attention, every detail, never mind what it is. You know that letter? And for Krishna's alone, pleasure is my motive. To have some faith that if I've given my life to Krishna, that Krishna always has me in the right place at the right time with the right people. Whatever is meant to be, that I am doing. Let me do it with full attention, every detail, never mind what it is. For Krishna's alone, pleasure is my motive. Let me pay attention to the detail of what I'm doing, simply to please Krishna. And then the sacrifice, the doer of the sacrifice, the offering, the sacrifice itself, and the result all merge into transcendence. You don't really distinguish between them. There's not really a distinguishing between the effort and the offering and the result. They're all the result. One's tasting nectar at every step. What does Prabhupada say? One lives life with a thrill at every moment. That thrill we're looking for in the result. I passed my exam! I finished my house! I graduated! We're looking for that, from the result. But suppose you could get bigger than that at every moment. That's, why not do that? Why just have work, 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 result? Which you might not even get. Or it may taste bad or something. Is that okay? And that's yoga. Did you want to say something?
I was just going to ask, is that connected with the verse that you said is one of the most important verses?
That the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice.
Is that the one?
3:15, yes.
Actually, I heard this story as well, that when Srila Prabhupada asked his disciples to go and get people to register for life membership.
Right.
And they were going and they weren't they weren't able to make that many memories. They were coming back and they were dejected and everything. Srila Prabhupada said to them, you know, no, don't, you know, you just have to be happy doing your service. Don't
exactly.
be attached to the result. And as soon as they changed their mindset and they were doing, they suddenly start making so many memories.
But don't calculate like that.
No, no, I'm not calculating.
I'm just saying don't, you have to make sure
I'm
you don't
not,
calculate like that.
Whatever happens, if I end up.
Exactly. You know, you may win the battle like Arjuna, you may lose the battle like Bhishma. It's that's not the indicator of Krishna's pleasure. It's not the source of our happiness. That's all an illusion. You know, of course we try to have a nice result also for Krishna. That's how what you do in the moment. In this moment I'm trying to make nice puris for Krishna. In the moment, I'm trying to speak to everyone in the room so that everybody leaves the class. I want to surrender to Krishna fully right now. That's the way you want to talk to everybody in the room. That's how you want to deal with everybody. That's your goal. It's not that you're just like, well, I don't care about the result. All right. Whatever. I don't know. Here's a verse here. You can... read it if you want, you know, if you like the verse, you like the verse, you don't like the verse, you don't like the verse, you want to surrender to Krishna, you know, I don't care about the result. You know, that's tamagun. So it's not that you don't care about the result in that way. But, you know, what would Krishna want me to do now? Krishna would want me to prepare, and Krishna would want me to meditate on this. Krishna wants me to put together a really nice program. And what does Krishna want me to do now? He wants me to clean the room and, you know, let me have everything really pukka. And here's a person now, how do I deal with them? I'm going to try to really relate with them as an individual. And, right? And if Krishna smiles and Guru smiles, then it's perfect. I'm sorry, I think it's already 9:05. And even though it is Sunday, I think we should end. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.